Welcome back to another episode of the Dumbest Guy in the Room podcast. I am your host, Eric Rao. Today we have our very first repeat guest on, Tomer Strohlite, as Rabbit Hole Sherpa is back to take us down a few more of his famous rabbit holes. We have a bit of a different episode for you today, as Tomer is going to read us two of his most recent pieces, and I try and shoot some questions back at him. Let me know your thoughts on this format. I would love to hear some feedback as we are trying new things. Please like, subscribe, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you can find me at E3BTC on all social media if you have any questions. Without further ado, here's Tomer. Welcome back to another episode of the Dumbest Guy in the Room podcast. I'm happy to announce that we have our first two-time guest back on the show, the Rabbit Hole Sherpa himself, Mr. Tomer Strohlite. How are you doing this morning, Tomer?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be back.
So am I.
Great feedback on the first episode. And so I'm hoping that twice is a charm and three times a charm, and we just keep on doing this whenever this calls.
Couldn't agree more. You've had one of the most listened to episodes that I've ever recorded. So happy to continue doing that and also, you know, help continue to promote your new works and as you've been releasing pieces. So looks like you've been busy over the last about month and a half since we talked. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been writing a lot. There's just so much. There's so much about Bitcoin that I'm moved to write about. And I really tried to focus a lot of my writing both on the people in the movement, the Bitcoiners, and what the movement is about. And I continue to try to make it easier or more understandable for people to wrap their heads around Bitcoin and to see what's going on, because we have so many new people coming in and there's so much complexity and understanding to get through. And it's such a unique and original thing. And that's actually there's two things that I've written in the last few weeks that I thought I would share here. I get a lot of people requesting that I read my pieces because they don't have time to read them or they just want to hear them read and discussed. And so I've got two pieces today that I wanted to share with you, both of which help people better understand Bitcoin, neither of which is technical really in any way. The first one is called Why Some People Think Bitcoin, or Why Some People Wonder If Bitcoin Is Alien Technology. And it really paints the Bitcoin technology and showing how different it is from any other kind of technology we've ever seen on Earth. So hence the alien metaphor. And the second one is called Painting a Portrait of Bitcoin, which actually aims to visualize, if you were a painter, and every listener will get to use their mind's eye to paint a portrait of what Bitcoin is in motion. And so I'll explain more obviously as I read that piece, but I thought we would review these two things. And for people who are, I understand many of the listeners to your show are relatively new to Bitcoin and people want to get a big picture view of it or understand what's going on. And it evades description with traditional metaphors. And so that's what I've tried to do with both of these pieces is, if it's so different, let's look at it as though it were alien technology. And if it is so vast or hard to look at, let's take the various pieces of it and concretize them as an artist would and illustrate them in a portrait. So
yeah, I think this will be a perfect thing for the show and a new thing for the listeners as well. So if you didn't catch that there, what we're gonna have Tomer do is we're gonna read two separate pieces. So we'll read one and then go through and answer some questions about it and bounce through it, and then same thing for the second. So I think it'll be a fun new thing we can try. And you know, as Tomer continues to release more and more writings, I think this is something that we could have as a recurring theme on our show for sure. Well, if you don't have anything else to preface it with, I think we can just jump into the first one.
Terrific. I'll dive in. Why people wonder if Bitcoin is alien technology. Where did Bitcoin come from? We don't know. It mysteriously appeared. It was introduced by a mysterious figure. Nobody knows their true identity. Bitcoin is an invention. Like all inventions, it does something that nothing before it did. However, Bitcoin is unlike any invention we have ever seen before. Many people who study Bitcoin closely eventually give their head a shake and say, "How did any person manage to come up with this?" Often, for at least a moment, they are also struck by the thought, "Was it even a person who came up with it?" As a result, the internet is filled with suppositions that Bitcoin was sent here by aliens or time travelers. I will try here to point out those things about Bitcoin that lead to people wondering about its origin. To be very clear, this is not an attempt to claim that Bitcoin came from outer space or the distant future. It simply spotlights the aspects of Bitcoin which operate so differently from anything else we see on Earth that they make people wonder about the strange circumstances behind its creation. I do intend, though, for this to be a fun way to learn about some of what makes Bitcoin so unique. So, one of a kind. Bitcoin appeared on Earth as an invention that satisfied a need all by itself, a need every person has, a need which was not being satisfied, the need for reliable money. There was only one Bitcoin, capital B, for the whole world, which was set to issue 21 million Bitcoins with a lowercase b. There wasn't one Bitcoin for you, and one for me, and one for Alice, and one for Bob. To this day, there remains only one capital B Bitcoin, but it is available to every human being on Earth. As we'll see later, it will be available to all humans who ever live on Earth, essentially forever. Other inventions require being reproduced in mass quantities so that each person who wants the invention can have one of their own. You've got your computer, I've got mine, but when it comes to Bitcoin, we all share the one invention. This itself is not entirely unique. Networks tend to have the property that they are shared by all their users. You may be thinking, for example, about the internet. Isn't there only one internet? But Bitcoin is not like the internet or other networks in many ways. You don't have a copy of the whole internet on your computer. In fact, the internet is a technology you use to access information that's specifically not in your possession, but instead in someone else's possession. Because I want you to read or hear this article, I'm posting it on a computer or through a podcast that will use internet protocols to send it to your computer. If I delete it, or if Eric deletes it, the article goes away, the podcast goes away, unless someone else made a copy. What makes Bitcoin unique is that it is a network that self-replicates in its entirety in a way unlike anything we've ever seen before on Earth. So self-replication of a different kind, replication unlike other man-made things. Bitcoin is self-replicating. When anyone starts up Bitcoin Core, it will begin working on creating a perfect, flawless replica of the entire Bitcoin blockchain, all the data in the Bitcoin network, from the Genesis block of data to the most recent one. No other human invention is self-replicating. Everything else is replicated, manufactured, or produced by people creating a copy. No two copies of anything physical can be truly exactly alike due to some imperfection somewhere in the production process. And we can make perfect digital copies of things like songs or software, but even in these cases, that is because they are static, unchanging content. If you add a note to your copy of a song, it doesn't change on every copy of the song everywhere in the world. However, Bitcoin is constantly adding data to its network, and what gets added anywhere gets added perfectly, flawlessly, everywhere. Nothing else on Earth does this, and not in the way that Bitcoin does. Replication unlike life. There are other things here on Earth that exhibit the property of self-replication, not human inventions, but living things. Living things self-replicate. Single cells divide into two cells, often identical to each other, but sometimes taking on different attributes. So does Bitcoin simply mimic life then? No. Bitcoin doesn't self-replicate the way life does. Unlike every new living cell that comes into existence, which has a sister cell, since we can't say after cell division which is the mother and which is the daughter, every new instance of Bitcoin that is spawned does not come from a single previous instance. The process a new Bitcoin instance utilizes to replicate itself is that it looks across the entire world to many other instances of Bitcoin, and it begins replicating the data from them that makes it Bitcoin. That data is known as the blockchain. It does not have one parent cell or instance. Rather, it checks with many instances to ensure they are all alike, to avoid any discrepancy between itself and any other copies. Living cells can and do introduce discrepancies in their replication from previous generations because they have no mechanism to check with other cells about what their correct construction should be. Such discrepancies are called mutations. However, every Bitcoin instance checks in with numerous random other existing instances. This ensures it contains no deviation, no mutation from any other instance. A Bitcoin instance never stops doing this. All the instances of Bitcoin in the world do this, every single one, constantly. They are all constantly checking in with all the others to make sure they're each perfectly identical to one another. Doesn't this seem alien? It's not like anything we've ever built, and it's not like the living things we see on Earth either. Leaderless, but identical, and honoring only work as their leader. There is no instance of Bitcoin that is the leader. None has any rank different than any other. They're all exactly the same. Any instance can propose a new state of the blockchain to the others. If its proposal is valid, all the instances it is connected to will accept its proposal and send the new valid state to all the others they are connected to. All those others will also accept that proposed change. This will repeat until every instance in the world is in perfect synchronization again. Can you think of anything else on Earth that does this? How does a proposal to change state achieve validity? There is only one way. That proposal must demonstrate, through a mathematical proof, that it performed enough computational work to surpass the threshold of work that is required to produce a new valid state. All instances of Bitcoin agree on the identical threshold required because it's calculated mathematically from the previous state that they all share identically. The new proposal must actually even further demonstrate it achieved a higher threshold of work than any other competing proposal. In case two instances have proposed different valid proposals, the one whose proposal eventually produces another valid proposal demonstrating more work will be deemed by all instances to be the valid one, even by the one that issued a competing proposal. That's all a minor detail. But as a result, all instances will remain in perfect synchronization always, without any one of them having any special privilege or authority. Work itself is the only thing the network values, respects, and obeys. Work alone. Not authority, not title, not rank, not wealth. These first three things do not even exist in Bitcoin: authority, title, and rank. The fourth, wealth, does not matter. Bitcoin honors work and work alone, only work that can be proven to have been done. We've already seen that Bitcoin's self-replication is unlike anything else we've seen on Earth. And here we see the self-replication does not rely on any violence, tolerates no deception, and surrenders to nothing. It accommodates only hard work. Can you think of anything else on Earth in which this is the standard? I can't. It is benevolent and fair to an unprecedented degree. Self-adjusting, but improvable. Every human invention eventually wears out, breaks, or at the very least needs ongoing maintenance to prevent it from falling apart. Every living thing eventually dies. Not Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't come with a warranty to replace it if it breaks, because it has no maker. Fortunately, it will never need repairing. That's pretty different than anything else we've seen humans invent. Bitcoin can just run forever. It's designed to operate at a steady pace, either with lots of work put into it or with very little. It self-adjusts. Bitcoin adjusts itself and refuses any other adjustments. To be clear, the only adjustments that can be made to Bitcoin are the adjustments it makes by itself to itself. Nobody else can adjust it. If you try to change Bitcoin's adjustment algorithm, your instance of Bitcoin will either halt or die. If you try to make the work requirement harder, your instance will soon fail to accept as valid a block that contains enough work as agreed to by all the other instances except yours now. It will then fail to receive any other blocks ever again, because all future blocks will depend on the one you rejected. If you try to make the work requirement easier, you risk being attacked and forked off by anyone who tricks you into accepting an easier block than the rest of the network required. Bitcoin will not tolerate anyone adjusting it. This isn't like someone selling you a device and saying you're not allowed to modify it. Bitcoin's code is open source. You're welcome to modify it. It will just not be Bitcoin if you do, and you don't need a mechanic to maintain it. There's a small exception to this. We do update Bitcoin Core from time to time with improvements that are related to usability or speed of performance. This is the human interface side of Bitcoin, though, and not the Bitcoin part of it. You don't need to install these updates, though. They affect nothing fundamental. New rules can be added, but none can ever be taken away. Also, quite rarely, we even modify Bitcoin to allow for new types of transactions. This is what we call soft forks. We don't have to do this. Bitcoin doesn't need these to survive. Bitcoin will continue to work without these modifications. We do it because we think there are new technologies that can make Bitcoin better. Bitcoin only lets us do this to it under certain conditions. When this happens, these modifications cannot violate any of the previous rules. If they tried to, they would be rejected, just as in the hypothetical attempt to adjust Bitcoin's work requirement. These soft forks are the introduction of new additional rules. They are not a changing of the previous rules to violate them in any way. Rather, they allow for new things to be done by introducing new rules. Now, what other invention on earth does this? What other invention on earth adds features by making its rules stricter? For example, when governments pass new restrictions, it means we can do less things. When Bitcoin does it, it means we have the option to do more. This feature of Bitcoin is so counterintuitive, so different from anything we've seen before, that it again looks unearthly. Everlasting. What about running out of space or running out of capacity? Bitcoin won't run out of either. Its database, the blockchain, has infinite size potential. It already has built in the capacity to create trillions of addresses for everyone who will ever live without needing any upgrade. As far as how much work it can handle, it has the capacity to absorb more than all the energy stored in the sun itself. Did I really just seriously say that Bitcoin already has built into it the capacity to absorb the entire energy of the sun and more? Yes. Am I exaggerating? No. Bitcoin has a variable called cumulative proof of work, which adds up all the work that went into creating the blockchain from Bitcoin's genesis block until the present. This is how each instance of Bitcoin determines which proposals have the most work and are therefore the correct one. The variable Bitcoin uses for this is 256 bits long, which is big enough to store all that energy and more. What human engineer would build this much slack into their design? Certainly not the human programmers who wrote those mainframe apps in the 70s, 80s, and 90s that didn't think ahead a couple of decades and required that the whole world make huge preparations and adjustments for the Y2K or year 2000 bug. Whoever created Bitcoin didn't just plan ahead a few decades. They planned ahead billions of years. They planned ahead for longer than mankind has been around, for longer than life on Earth has been around, for longer even than the Earth has been around. What human being designed something to last for that duration? I wish people engineered things to be self-replicating, self-adjusting, self-governing, and everlasting. But nobody has engineered anything to do even one of these. And then along comes Bitcoin and does them all, mysteriously appearing out of nowhere and spreading everywhere in a short period of time. This is why some people wonder if it is of human origin. Becoming exponentially scarcer over 130 years. What about the 4-year cycles after which Bitcoin cuts its issuance of new Bitcoins by half? No other human invention increasingly restricts the supply of the thing people find valuable about it. Bitcoin does. Humans usually design each invention to be scaled up in supply as rapidly as possible. Not Bitcoin. It was designed to scale down its new supply, not gradually and smoothly, but suddenly, although very predictably, and not in a linear fashion, which is something humans can easily understand, but in an exponential fashion, which is something humans do not easily understand. Nothing else on Earth, no human invention and no life form, exhibits any of these traits. So again, even in this, Bitcoin is like nothing else on Earth. Why 130 years of issuance? I myself wonder, why does this halving event take place every 4 years? Why not every single year, or why not every 10 years? Is 1 year too short to incentivize humans to accumulate Bitcoin? Is 10 years too long to expect them to wait? I don't know. However, one thing that this 4-year cycle leads to is that the total issuance period of Bitcoin's 21 million coins takes about 130 years from start to finish. This is just safely outside the range of the longest human life ever documented, of 122 years. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But what this does mean is that when the issuance period is completed, probably every living person will not have ever lived a day in their life in which Bitcoin did not exist on Earth. Bitcoin is taking its time to complete its issuance until every human on Earth has never known a world without it. And that includes the mysterious person who created it, if in fact he was human.
Perfect. That's a great piece, Tomer. Thanks for writing that. And thanks for reading it as well. I think a good place to start would be maybe just what inspired you to write this piece itself?
The fact that I had this thought like years ago, I'm reading this stuff and it's all starting to come together for me. And I'm just seeing this thing does so many things that nothing's ever done before. And I'm like, take pause. And I'm like, maybe aliens delivered it. Like, you know, maybe it's a gift from another civilization to help us sort through some major problem that we've got, which is destroying our civilization. And this is the cure. And it doesn't look like something that somebody could just come up with out of the blue. It's like, it's built to last forever. Like, it's going to take us eons. And I have, and if you do go to that article, I have a short science fiction story that I've published afterwards that envisions how we'll actually live for billions of years, thanks to humans working with Bitcoin, which is called Moving Heaven and Earth. And so that's an application of some of these insights, which I'm not reading today, but maybe we'll find another time for me to read it. And that's a short read as well. That's just that's like a 10-minute, and it's structured as a dialogue between a storyteller and a person asking the storyteller questions. So it's kind of interactive.
Sounds good. So I think we should go through this and talk about a few points that you brought up.
Sure.
So one of the first things that you said is Bitcoin is an invention, you know, and it, like nothing else that has been invented before. So can you talk about how something can be an invention while using so many old inventions to create it?
Sure. I mean, you think of something simple like the automobile, right? Like the wheel existed and the internal combustion engine existed. But the car didn't exist. And so you take these two inventions that existed before, you slap them together, you add a chair. Okay, I think the first one was like a carriage, it didn't even have a steering wheel. It had like some steering rod, and you've invented the automobile. And I think that's the process of most inventions, is the combination of previously invented things. I mean, by definition, right? You can always track back some things to parts that were previously known and previously invented. So there might have been some first invention that nobody knew anything and they invented, I don't know, people talk about the wheel, right? But who knows what specific things, but all inventions are, I think the definition of invention is essentially the assembling of things in a way that has never been assembled before. And that's what makes it inventious. I made up that word.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty unique. Would you mind for the listener diving into a little bit of the technology that existed prior to Bitcoin and how Satoshi shared it?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin combined a number of different things from two basic technologies, one from cryptography and one from peer-to-peer networking. One's from cryptography and one's from peer-to-peer networking. So from cryptography, there's a lot of utilization of secure hash algorithms, which again, I don't think we should go into here because we're trying to keep things simple, but they basically take big amounts of data and make random numbers out of it with which are unpredictable before you run them, but consistent once every time you put the same data in, you get the same random looking number out, the exact same number. And these have been used for lots of different things. In Bitcoin, they're used to verify the proof of work, which is an invention that someone by the name of Adam Back discovered, that you could actually tie real work in the world to these cryptographic functions. So we make a lot of use of secure hash algorithms. We make a lot of use of public-private key cryptography, which was an invention, I think, from the late 70s, where we discovered that you can generate a very big random number and nobody else in the world can guess it. And you can derive another number from it, which you can share with other people. And then using that number, you can prove to other people that you own the big private number, or they can encrypt data using that public number and only you, the private number, can decrypt it. So these are some of the cryptographic technologies. And then the other piece of technology that it uses is peer-to-peer marketing, which some of your older listeners will, peer networking. And peer-to-peer networking it eliminates the client-server architecture that we're familiar with. Like my computer connects to Facebook server, so I'm the client, Facebook is the server. But in peer-to-peer networks, everybody's equal. And that's certainly what Bitcoin uses. And it was previously used, like the music sharing revolution began with peer-to-peer networking, where people started file sharing music, and that led to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which is a very ugly episode in legal history and should be abolished. But those are the two technologies that Bitcoin fundamentally brings together. There's a lot of other little things, but these are the profound technologies, the things that make there be no authority in them, and the things that give it this space to operate and that will last for eternity, trillions of years without running out of space, because cryptography uses such vastly big numbers. Like most of these numbers are numbers at least as big as all the atoms in the visible universe. And that's why it has this unlimited capacity to store things, because it can store the whole universe in it.
Perfect.
Alien. Right. Like maybe exactly. The original cryptographers were aliens. Maybe we shouldn't, you know, and Satoshi just put their pieces together.
Maybe. So how can Bitcoin continue to run forever, even after all the coins are mined?
Sure. Well, Bitcoin continues to run, you know, Bitcoin, every block issues a new reward. Eventually that reward goes to zero, but the miners continue to get paid with fees, and people who want to use the limited capacity of the blocks space to transmit and have transactions confirmed have to pay a fee. And those fees are expected to go up in time as well as in value, as the value of Bitcoin goes up. So Bitcoin can continue operating even if it's issuing no reward. The incentive for miners is to get paid in Bitcoin. And right now we're going through this 130-year long fair issuance period. But when that period is over, and so I actually like to say, this is Bitcoin's prepubescent years, right? It's still growing in terms of the number of Bitcoins it's issuing. It will be a mature technology in the 120 years or 118 years that remain in the issuance cycle, it's still growing. But the algorithms will continue to work. The incentives will continue to be there for miners to mine and for people to pay to put transactions into the blockchain. So the question would be, well, what would stop it? And the answer is there's nothing to stop it. As long as people want to keep using Bitcoin, Bitcoin can continue to be used. I mean, and that's part of what we've already seen is, darn, this thing is unstoppable. It just, no matter what people throw at it or try to deprive it of, it just keeps on ticking flawlessly. And there's all these famous websites that try to track how many times Bitcoin has been declared dead, but it's actually had no downtime in over 10 years. So it's really, or just about 10 years, you know, in its entire history, it's only had two short downtime events, which were in its early days, and it's been running flawlessly, unstoppably since.
It's pretty crazy how resilient the network is when you zoom out and look at it as far as. Well,
go ahead. Right, I was going to say, I think I had this in an earlier version of the article, but I didn't want to make it too long. Like Google has been down a few times this year, right? Google, and they have billions and billions and billions of dollars of infrastructure and redundancy and backup, but things happen. Bitcoin hasn't been down in 10 years, and Bitcoin hasn't raised a single dollar. It's never sold. Okay, like Bitcoin as a network just exists and it's never going down. So that, like, that's another one of these things where you say, like, boy, that's without taking in a penny of capital, you know, without borrowing a dollar, just by creating its own incentives, Bitcoin has operated flawlessly, and nothing else that humans have built operates as flawlessly. I should probably add that to the article, right? It just keeps on ticking without any help from the kind of things that traditional human corporations need. I kind of covered it, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of like the decentralized network is, you know, when China bans Bitcoin mining, and so, you know, 40-50% of all the hash rate goes offline, Bitcoin just continues to go. Blocks are a little bit slower for a couple of days or a week until the difficulty adjustment comes, and then it continues back on its 10-minute pace. Right. And it's pretty crazy, you know, like if Google were to shut down, like you mentioned, like half of their servers, Google wouldn't work properly until those servers were brought back on. And so that's what's incredible about the decentralized network, and allows, you know, resilience for it to continue.
It is amazing. That kind of takes me, and maybe I'm leaping ahead on a question, but it takes me to the point that I made, that the only adjustments you can make to Bitcoin are none, right? Like Bitcoin is adjustable, but it makes the adjustments to itself. It's got like this artificial intelligence built in this difficulty adjustment algorithm, which we just started talking about, and nobody can change it. I mean, if you change it, you basically just fork off the network and die, but everyone else running Bitcoin just ignores you, and you've made no changes to Bitcoin. I think this is part of its power, its unstoppability, right? If China could, if they wanted to stop it, they would say, okay, well, everybody change the difficulty adjustment algorithm to make it too hard to mine a block. But they can't. They can't change it because they just disappear. So in the same way as they took the mining off, that didn't stop it. They can do whatever they want to try to fork the code themselves, but everyone else will just ignore them. And that's, that again, is just part of the power of this thing, that where every everything synchronizes with everything else according to the same rules. And so you cannot try to break it by corrupting one of these things, because they're all in perfect mathematically provable alignment. And so you try to change one bit in one instance of the Bitcoin blockchain, and every node in the world will say, that's a lie. Just one bit, right? The thing is like 400 gigabytes big or something. You change one bit anywhere in it, you flip one bit, everything fails to validate, and everyone can see that you've doctored it. Like that's pretty powerful stuff.
So why is it that the difficulty adjustment just works and people can't change it? So was that programmed in by Satoshi at the yeah. beginning? And then, yeah. so how is that different? You know, because like you mentioned, there's some things that can be modified and some things that can't. So can you right. talk a little bit about the difference between those two things?
Yeah, I think this is a really subtle point, and it's hard in one article to get across all the nuances in which people can or can't change. Like literally, if everybody in the world agreed to change the difficulty algorithm, if everybody in the world running Bitcoin agreed to, then that Bitcoin would cease to exist and some new version of it with a different difficulty adjustment algorithm would exist. But it is the way it is, and it's very hard to change because people don't want to change it, because it keeps they're storing their value in it and running the nodes, and keeping this difficulty adjustment algorithm as is what gives us all of this predictability over the issuance timeframe. The difficulty adjustment algorithm is what keeps Bitcoin essentially ticking along at on average one block every 10 minutes. And this is an invention that Satoshi had. Nobody had come up with the difficulty adjustment algorithm in any previous instance of cryptographic money or anything else. So this is Satoshi's addition. In addition to combining all the other previously invented pieces, he invented this. So he took all these other inventions, proof of work, public key cryptography, peer-to-peer networking, and he invented a difficulty adjustment, and he put all those things together to create Bitcoin on whatever planet he did this on. And what this means is that no matter how much energy you throw at Bitcoin, it just looks at its last 2 weeks worth of blocks in every 2 week period roughly, and says, well, if that took less than 2 weeks, I'm going to make it harder because clearly more energy is coming in. And if that took longer than 2 weeks, I'm going to make it easier. And it does this with a mathematical precision. It doesn't just say, I'll make it 10% easier. It looks exactly how much longer did it take, and I'll make it exactly that much percent more easy, right? Or that much percent more difficult, so that the math works out to making it exactly 10 minutes on an expected average from what we witnessed in the last 2 week period. So that's the brilliance of this thing. And that's why Bitcoin just keeps on running. You can't really accelerate it, not for long, and you can't really slow it down, not for long. And that's what we've seen. We've seen both, we've seen kind of records in both directions in the last year, where we've had a record amount of energy withdrawn from the network. And for a while it took 13 minutes for blocks to come in on average, and then it fixed itself. And then it took 11 because more was taken, and it fixed itself again. And so it just keeps fixing itself, and nobody else can, and nobody needs to fix it, right? It's got this, it's self-maintaining, right? I use the word self-adjusting, but it's self-maintaining. So, and again, how can you imagine any other kind of invention that is aware of itself enough to maintain itself? It's not consciously aware of itself like you and I are, but it is aware of the frequency at which the blocks come in, and it has the ability to adjust for that. So again, there's a whole other discussion as to whether Bitcoin is lifelike or alive, or, you know, this of another fun topic of conversation for another article.
Yeah, you saying that actually reminds me a lot. I was just speaking with Joel from Untapped Growth the other day. Yeah, and he was talking about his cows, and, you know, one of his cows was having stomach problems, and it went and ate the ash from a right. fire that he had the night before. And so mm-hmm. it just recognized yeah. that its stomach needed some help and some calming from the charcoal and what was in the yeah. ash. And it knew at its like base level. So it's like you just mentioned, it's self-maintained in yeah. order to continue its survival yeah. moving forward. And I think there's like some correlation there with, you know, animals in the wild and plants mm-hmm. in the wild that kind of do this self-maintaining, have this self-maintaining ability.
It's such a good point, Eric. Like, there are self-maintaining things in nature, and we humans kind of get it into our heads that this self-maintenance doesn't exist. So one, we look at all these machines that we build and none of them maintain themselves. So we need a mechanic or, you know, a professional, a plumber, what, like all these tradespeople we call in who are expert at fixing these man-made things that break. We also go to doctors to fix ourselves because we think, oh, well, if anything is broken in me, I need the equivalent in the medical field, rather than thinking, well, what can I do to take care of myself to make myself better? It's not to say doctors aren't necessary. There's a lot of things we can't improve by ourselves, but there are also actions we can take that minimize the damage or that reverse the damage. And a cow eating ash, my dogs, when they get stomach aches, they go out and they eat the grass because I guess it helps with refuge. They know to do that. I don't need to stop them. And I don't need to run to the veterinarian with them to say, what pill can you give them to help them get something out of their stomach in every one of these instances. They just need to eat the grass and they need to either throw up or, you know, poo it out. And they know this. So I think that's another reflection on human beings, which is a little bit beside the topic of this, but it is a fascinating topic. And I think Bitcoin and nature show us so many things that we have kind of gotten confused about as humans living in a highly manufactured technological civilization, that, you know, there are multiple ways to take care of things.
Most definitely
involves hiring a professional.
Yep, exactly. So one thing that you mentioned was soft fork. Could you talk a little bit about like what exactly a soft fork is?
Sure.
Without, you know, we don't have to get too in depth with I think it'd be something good for the listener.
I'll make it easy. A soft fork is adding new rules. So it's not breaking any of the old rules. It's adding new rules so that Bitcoin can recognize new things. Because right now it recognizes public-private key cryptography using an algorithm called elliptic curve cryptography. And we're having a soft fork that has already been locked in and will activate in November that will activate a different type of digital signature algorithm, not elliptic curve cryptography. It won't stop elliptic curve cryptography. That will still be recognized by the platform, but it will in addition recognize something called Schnorr signatures, which is a more mathematically advanced technique that allows for a couple of other features that elliptic curve doesn't allow for and a little bit more efficiency. And you don't need, like, very few people, even mathematicians, have studied exactly any one of these things, let alone all of them, to distinguish them. So I don't want to confuse the audience by going into like super duper advanced doctorate level mathematics stuff that I myself don't really understand well. But Bitcoin will now be able to recognize these new types of rules and you'll be able to use them in transactions and nothing old will be broken. And so what a soft fork is it's an agreement by everybody to enforce these new rules that recognize these new technologies as well. This is opposed to something that, why do we call a soft fork? Well, I guess there's something called a hard fork. There is. A hard fork is changing the code to break the previous laws, so which would not be backwards compatible and would cause a split in the chain, or like two versions of Bitcoin to exist. Anyone who is running the old version would no longer agree with anybody who is running the new version. So they're non-backwards compatible version. They're essentially killing Bitcoin and starting something different by the same name. And many of the altcoin projects have had many hard forks, and they continue to operate under the same name because they don't have decentralized mining or decentralized existence. And so they, you know, the person in charge claims that the thing that he killed and the thing that he reintroduced is the same thing, but it's a different set of rules. It's different. It's like, it's a different thing. Bitcoin is differentiated when we soft fork it, but it's perfectly backwards compatible. So it's still the same thing. Like that's kind of the position that, or the framing that I would suggest people use, is like, if Bitcoin's going along and it's eating new knowledge with these soft forks, it's not forgetting old knowledge. Hard fork is saying, oh, forget all the old rules. They don't exist anymore. There's a new set of rules. And so it really is like lobotomizing the network, and it's violating the promises that you originally made, right? Bitcoin has never violated a single promise that was made in the white paper when it was launched. Not a single one, right? And not a single time. Not just in general, it's kept its promises, like always, ever, forever, without a single exception, it's kept its promises. What on earth does that? No politician, that's for sure.
That's a great point. Okay, so one last topic before we jump over to your second piece.
Yeah.
Why don't humans comprehend and understand exponentials?
Because they don't, I think at the scale that we live in, like there's exponential things happening all around us, but they're not the ones we're aware of. What we're aware of are things like grass grow, like the harvest coming in and the weather getting a little bit warmer or a little bit colder, or the number of people who we see around us every day, which are all kind of these linear things. Like, we rarely grow exponential things. And so I think it just comes from not being exposed to these things, as opposed to our brains are not wired to understand these things. If you are a biochemist and you're growing vats of bacteria, which increase exponentially all the time, you get pretty used to the exponential growth pretty quickly. You don't, like, every day you come in and go, oh no, the number of them doubled and the doubling caused it to overflow. Or like if you are dealing with high interest rates, and you see 24% compound annual growth, that's an exponential, now compounding is an exponential function, you get pretty used to it pretty fast. Or you run the numbers and you take a look at the, or you know that it doesn't make sense to you that something will be worth a million times what it was, you know, just a few compounding periods earlier, but you at least know, I'm going to run the numbers, so I'm going to see it, because I know it's counterintuitive. And wow, look at the phenomenal growth of exponentials. So I think it's just not something that we're generally used to. And we learn to count like 1, 2, 3, 4, that's linear growth. We don't count 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 24, right? Like, and that's exponential counting. So I think we don't train our brains to think exponentially. And as a result, we're shocked by it because it's so different from linear growth.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Are there any exponentials that, you know, rather than bacteria or compound interest, that humans see in a day-to-day basis that they might not recognize, or any good like thought experiments to think about exponentials that we could help the listener to kind of wrap their head around?
I haven't really prepared any thinking on this. I mean, when you throw something off of a building, I think its speed accelerates until it reaches a terminal speed somewhat exponentially. But no, sorry, that's even linear. I can't really think of things that we observe with our eyes happening exponentially very frequently. And maybe that's another thing, right? Like, you don't see things in human digestible timeframes. Maybe I'm missing something obvious that does happen, but we really just don't see these things happening. Like, we don't see cars accelerate at exponential rates. We see them accelerate at linear rates. We don't see, we see things falling and accelerating at a linear rate through gravity, not an exponential rate. And so I think it is hard, right? Like, we tend to see exponentials in the realm of numbers, and it is in nature. I mean, like, if you took a look, if you don't look at bacteria, you kind of look at any living thing where you say, like, I've got these flies flying around me right now, fruit flies, because we brought fruit into the house that has flies. And like, one fruit fly came in yesterday and I now got 16. And if I don't do anything about it, I'll have 32 and 64 and 128 really soon. So if you've ever had to deal with an infestation of flies, you've seen exponential growth and you realize that you can't kill them one at a time. But I'm going to pause there on this one, because I am a little stumped as to where we regularly see exponential growth in our daily lives.
Yeah, that's a tough one for sure. Sorry to put you on the spot there. I can't think of like anything I regularly see, but there's two examples that come to mind for me. Is one is, you always hear the stories about 7-year bamboo. And okay, you know, for 7 years, you see no vertical growth. But if you zoom out and you can look at the root system, it's growing down pretty aggressively. And then after that 7 years, it shoots up, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but I believe it's like over 50 feet in a year, or less than 2 years or something like that. It grows vertically. And so something like that, you know, like, where you wouldn't see it unless, or you wouldn't understand what's truly going on unless you lived at the place that, or saw the place that it was planted every day for the whole time frame. I think something like that might be kind of on the same page. And then the other one that somebody told me that I like to think about, is like, if you, how high do you think you've probably heard this, like, how high do you think a piece of paper would be if you were able to fold it in half 50 times?
Right. Yeah. And you reach the sun is the answer, right? Is
that, exactly. So most people think like a table height, or the ceiling, or height of the house. But what actually happens when you double it 50 times, a piece of paper will get all the way to the sun. And so you start to think of
it's a big piece of paper you need. But exactly. I think this is the challenge, right? Because first of all, you can't fold a piece of paper more than 8 times before it gets too thick. So we never see this exponential growth. And this is the problem. One good thought experiment that I think people have, which really talks to understanding exponential growth functions, is imagine something that is a percentage of the size of a whole, and it grows tenfold each time. So, you know, if it was 10% at the next growth period, it's 100%, but it starts at 0.0000001%. And this is how most exponential technologies enter our civilization, right? Like no one guy uses it, right? But then they convinced 10 guys to use it. So it's gone from 0.00, like 0.08 zeros to 7 zeros with a one, and then 6 zeros with a one. And then what starts to happen is it starts to approach, like it gets to be 0.1%. Right? That's how many people, you know, and then it gets to be 1%. Maybe that's how many people own Bitcoin in the world now, 1%. But then it goes to 10%. And the people who were laughing at it when it was 1/100th of 1%, three compoundings ago, suddenly are getting a little bit nervous, but it's already too late, because it's about to go through another 10x, which will take it to 10%, another 10x, which will take it to 100%. And they missed their boat, because they needed to get in when it was 0.00001%. And so this is a really useful, I think that's a very easy way to visualize exponential data. And, you know, it's not all of these things are in tenths and multiply by 10, they are like sevenths or 30 seconds or something, but that's how exponential growth happens. And once something gets big and its momentum is out of control, it cannot be stopped, because it's already generated so much momentum, and it's got this exponential characteristic to it. So that's enough about exponentials, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. Once it reaches that tipping point, there's no looking back on it. You know, maybe some exponential writings are in the future. As you can get things down to a very base level for right. That's easy for people to understand, that maybe that'd be a good one. Okay. Is it time we jump over to painting a portrait of Bitcoin?
Yeah. Let's do the next one.
Perfect.
Okay, so this one is self-explanatory. There's a reference to an earlier article. This is part two of something. You don't have to read the previous one to appreciate this, but I will read the references, and I do encourage people. The previous article is a long one. It's a moral philosophical piece, so it's not an easy read, but it's not a hard read. And I think it talks about human morality, which every one of us understands at some level. So if you want to read it, by all means, and I'll hopefully appear somewhere and read it before too long. But this one is called Painting a Portrait of Bitcoin, part two of The Essence of Bitcoin. Painting a Portrait of Bitcoin. In this article, I want to paint a mental picture of Bitcoin in action. This is not easy to do. Bitcoin isn't a physical entity. No actual light bounces off of it. So seeing it directly with the eyes isn't possible. Neither is hearing it, smelling it, tasting it, or touching it. Recalling the essence of Bitcoin, moral virtue being bound to mathematical proofs. Bitcoin's essence, as I wrote in part one of this series, has to do with its binding of moral principles, principles that can be violated, with mathematical ideals that cannot be violated. The moral principles I discussed were virtues such as truth, fairness, and voluntary trade. And the mathematical ideals Bitcoin incorporates with these virtues are proofs, proofs of knowledge, proofs of work, proofs of truth. But let's get to the painting. The first element in our portrait is going to be transactions. In painting our mental picture of Bitcoin, I want to begin with a blank canvas and then add elements to it that correspond to aspects of Bitcoin. And let us start by examining every transaction in Bitcoin. Every single transaction is inspected for complete mathematical truth. First, it can only spend coins that have not yet been spent. If it is spending pre-existing coins, on ones that have already been given to you, it must mathematically prove that the spender has knowledge of the private keys to the coins being spent. If it is the special Coinbase transaction, that's the transaction that discovers new coins and collects fees from other transactions, it must be associated with an entire block of valid transactions, all of which adhere to the previous rule, and which also mathematically proves that the necessary work has been done to bind that entire block to the previous block. Every single transaction, every one, is a proven statement of truth, adhering to the moral principles of either this is my money to spend according to the rules of Bitcoin, or I have worked to earn this money according to the rules of Bitcoin. So in picturing this in your mind's eye, focus first on a single transaction, a true statement, which is verifiable. You can picture it in any way you want. For me, I just picture a shiny sentence. It shines because it's true and its truth can be verified. Our second element, a block. Let's picture a block next. A block is a bundle of hundreds of proven transactions, all these shiny sentences, wrapped in another shiny proof, the proof of work. But each block also has an unseverable link to the previous block. In fact, you can imagine that the previous block is embedded within each block, because it actually is. Like those Russian dolls that fit inside one another, each block contains the unique mathematical fingerprint of the previous block. The word block tends to denote a sharp-edged object that is either a cube or brick-like, but you don't have to picture it in that shape. Pick whatever shape you feel represents truth, work, and containment of truth. That's what a block is, after all. It contains all these proven truths, new transactions, and all the previous blocks, and wraps them in another truth, proof of work. And that wrapper is shiny too, representing truth, but it's also completely transparent, hiding nothing and allowing anyone to see through it all the way down to the original block and to see every transaction within each one. Now, Bitcoin in motion. Bitcoin doesn't stand still. It is constantly in motion. It moves only forward, outward, and upward, because the number of valid blocks can only grow. It can never shrink. The pace of growth is incredibly steady, like a locomotive. It moves at an average speed of one block per 10 minutes. Sometimes that speeds up a little, sometimes it slows down a little, but it always catches its breath and re-regulates to that steadfast pace, no matter what is thrown at it or taken away from it. So picture Bitcoin moving by growing, expanding by one block that surrounds all the other blocks, and adding its bright, shining proof of work as the seal around everything that came before. Like how a tree forms a new ring each year around the previous rings, Bitcoin forms a new block around the previous blocks every 10 minutes. And what surrounds Bitcoin? Outside the newest block, hovers a swarm of new unconfirmed transactions. Those that are mathematically true, the shiny ones, are permitted to stay nearby, for they will be confirmed into a new block eventually. Any that are not mathematically true, those that are lies, are instantly zapped and turned to ash. Miners surround this structure, making copies of these shiny transactions and working away to try to form a valid new block. Occasionally, one miner shouts out, "Eureka, I've found a valid block," and they hold it up for all the other miners and node operators to inspect. Each one of those tests for themselves the validity of the block. If they confirm that this proposed block is pure and true, containing the proof of work and only valid true transactions, then Bitcoin steps inside this new block and the miners begin work on the next one. This process never stops. That is Bitcoin in this picture, but it is not the whole picture. There's the plebs. Bitcoin is surrounded by people. And as Bitcoin marches forward, it is surrounded by growing throngs of people who have come to witness this pristine being of pure truths. They stand in amazement and wonderment. Many are engaged in undertaking the rite of passage of verifying each and every transaction and block in Bitcoin's entire history for themselves. This is called running a full node. New people are always starting this process to verify for themselves the complete and flawless truth of the blockchain. And others still, for the first time, are reaching the end of this process and catching up to the present, overjoyed to have seen for themselves that this whole thing is, as promised, only truths without a single error, omission, or lie. None have ever seen anything like it before. Flawless, huge, true, growing, unstoppable. Many cast their fiat money before it, money they know is a lie, and receive in exchange Satoshis, which they know are truths. They proudly hold up their Satoshis with looks on their faces of pride and happiness at being able to hold for the first time in their lives the real truth. Some behave as they would in front of a wishing well. They cast their fiat coins into Bitcoin and pray that it will grant them enough wealth to buy a home in which to raise a family or to pursue some other dream. Those that have been patient see those wishes granted. The crowd keeps growing. More and more people are drawn to this truth machine, this truth being. None have ever seen anything like it before, and they are mesmerized. Mesmerized by its shining, radiant beauty, the beauty of flawless, beautiful, truth. And there's dark souls in the distance. In the distance, there are dark souls. They are scared. They are the souls of the liars. They once held power over billions of victims, but the victims are suddenly freed, freed to walk towards the truth, released from the chains of lies that held them back, which the liars have created. And those dark souls are not just scared. They're in a complete panic. They see the unstoppable growth of Bitcoin closing in on them. Slowly, but steadily and unstoppably, Bitcoin advances, one step at a time, always forward, every 10 minutes, marching, marching to end the dark soul's reign of lies with its shiny, unstoppable blocks of pure truths. So step back and observe the completed portrait. This is Bitcoin, the being of truth displacing lies with honesty for everyone in the world.
Very nice. I like that a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, I got goosebumps reading it. That never happened to me.
That's a cool one for sure. So I guess a great first question for this one especially is like, so what inspired you to write this and try and visualize this?
It came to me in a meditation, interestingly enough. I was meditating. I do a lot of meditating and thinking about Bitcoin. And this was, again, so much of my stuff comes from my subconscious. It's not like I sit down and say, I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to paint a picture of Bitcoin. I started meditating and I had been to a Bitcoin meetup. This was last Thursday. So it's exactly a week ago. I was at a Bitcoin meetup and I met so many wonderful Bitcoiners and it was in a lovely setting. And I think my mind went back to the yard in front of that place or to that neighborhood. And I saw all these Bitcoiners first gathering around something. And I said, well, what, I think I asked myself, well, what is this thing that everybody's gathering around? And what is it that we value about it? And we were talking that night and it was reliable. It was honest. It was truth. And we're drawn to it. And so all these images started to come together in my mind. And I could see this vision of this thing. And then I expanded upon it when I started to document it and write it out and it clarified. But it was a vision that came to me in a meditation.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, like trying to write about describing something visually that doesn't actually exist visually. It's tough. It's right. It actually makes me think of like looking at the little logo for Medium up here in the top left, right. Is like it's kind of like the Doppler effect. So you're okay, like, yeah. Trying to, you know, visualize what something is that doesn't have any physical characteristics.
You know what there was one other thing that I saw. My wife occasionally buys these crystals. There are people who sell them on Instagram and stuff, and there was one that she found the other day, and I don't think it'll show, which is called a phantom crystal. And what it is, it is a crystal, but when you look at it in certain light, and I just don't think I can get it to show here, but you can see maybe you can actually. Can you see the layers? Like, so you can see all the way through to the middle of this crystal, but you can also see all these peak tops within it. And if you saw it in 3D, I guess, you'd see that each one was inside the other. So it's all these mountains like inside each other. And I thought that, that's what Bitcoin is like. It just keeps growing outside, right? The Genesis block is the first mountain on the inside. And then the second block is the next mountain and so on and so on. And if this crystal were able to keep growing by one layer every 10 minutes, that's kind of what Bitcoin is. It takes only this pure quartz or whatever actually goes into this, and it has to be aligned perfectly. And every now and then something happens, it causes a crystallization event, which is like finding a new block, and the crystal gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you can also picture Bitcoin as a crystal, a transparent crystal filled with all these layers inside of it. There's like I think maybe, I mean, I'd love it if there are some people who are listening who are artistically inclined, visually inclined, if they wanted to go ahead and paint it or build a sculpture out of it or make something that represents it, a video or something, by all means, go right ahead.
Yeah, it would be interesting to try and see like what artists, you know, like you are an artist in the sense of words and writing, but like a visual artist as far as right. Painting or sculptures would try and think of, you know, especially like in conjunction with this piece, because it is just something that's so different. Like we have There's the one artist who creates the
you're talking about Fractal Encrypt, who creates
Fractal Encrypt
sculptures. Yeah. I'm gonna reach out to him and talk to him about this piece that I wrote. Maybe there's something there that would move him. He and I
that'd be interesting to say the least, because his are the node sculptures, is that correct?
Yeah, the full node sculptures. And he's doing some other interesting things. I know he shared some prototypes. His work is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. And it's like true to Bitcoin. I have an article written about one of his full node sculptures. It's called Sound Money and Sound Art. The common thread is integrity. I think it's something like that. And it's in my Who Are the Bitcoiners collection. And it's a fun article.
That's cool. So as you went through writing this piece, obviously you had to start somewhere. So why did you start with like transactions?
They're the basic building blocks. Like I think it was easy for me to say, like, blocks are made out of transactions, so I need to start with transactions. Interestingly, blocks are not the basic building blocks. Transactions are the basic building blocks, and that's all the blockchain is. It's an endless series of transactions. The transactions are grouped into blocks. They're integrated into each other with the proof of work. So I think once I started saying, "Oh my God, I can actually visualize this thing in some meaningful way," that was not a hard part of the article to say, just start with transactions. And, you know, I took some liberty in saying, well, they're like shiny sentences because they've got this proof of truth. Everyone can, like, you can actually look at a transaction and it contains inside of it the public key and the private and the address that it came from. So you can derive its truth from, like, it's a self-contained truth, right? You can run it through the algorithm to validate a transaction. You don't need anything else from outside. It's a self-contained truth. So it's kind of a beautiful statement that way. Like if I could, the only kind of sentence I can say that is a self-contained truth or what are considered like philosophical axioms, like existence exists. Right. And so I can say that, and it's provably true, because in order to deny it, you have to contradict yourself. Right. And so existence does not exist. Well, how do you know? Well, because I exist denying existence. Right. So if you're here to deny the existence of existence, you exist. And so existence exists. So it's kind of like, but these are self-contained, mathematically provable, mathematically verifiable statements, which is really cool. Like a mathematical statement that's provable in and of itself.
Something I thought was interesting about your comparison to a shiny sentence is, at the end of the day, to create a transaction, you have to sign using your 24 keys, usually 24 keys. And so almost like your 24 words are your sentence, and then it's shiny because you've clicked okay. So it's like, it's signaling that, you know, it's,
yeah.
It's
you, oh, well, you know what I didn't do? You've caught me out. I didn't paint a picture of anyone creating a transaction. They just suddenly appear in my portrait, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't just suddenly appear out of nowhere. That you just described exactly what they are. There are people who want to move the Bitcoins that they have the keys to, and they say, I, Tomer, say I want Eric to have these Bitcoins, and that's just an empty statement. It's like a gray empty statement, but then I bring in my private key to it and I unlock it, and it becomes shiny, and it hovers around the blockchain waiting to be mined by miners. So maybe I should even go back and modify this article to paint a picture of what people creating, because all the transactions, they don't just come out of nowhere. They are human beings making a decision to send these Bitcoins to other human beings. Yeah, really good.
Those people are writing that the sentence.
Yes, every one of these. Every one of these shining sentences is like, and I think that's another one of these beautiful things that I didn't capture now, because there are people sitting around crafting shining sentences, right? Like that people who are sending transactions are doing that, and they, when they release this shining sentence, I kind of picture them like shiny butterflies too, right? Because I see them, maybe they're cyber hornets, maybe they swarm around the blockchain, but they're shiny and they're beautiful, and like you can create one if you want some Bitcoin. You can send it back to yourself just for fun and pay a small fee, but you can send it to somebody else, and you know that it's going to get to them, and you know you're going to get the change back. So it is participating in uttering a truth, and uttering a provable truth to create a transaction. So I would add that, everybody in your mental models, add that there's people around creating transactions, not just casting their fiat money into it, but then spending their Bitcoins in a circular economy of truth, of integrity.
Yeah, it's
I like Bitcoin, by the way, in case any listeners are wondering.
I don't think anybody could tell. Awesome. Okay, let's see. Are there any other questions I had that popped up? You did a great job of painting a picture. And so this one's pretty straightforward, I think. And the cool thing about this one as well is I think it gives each individual listener or reader the ability to visualize it themselves. It's like reading a book. You know, the movie that you see is one person's interpretation of the book that you read. Yeah. And sometimes it hits right in alignment and you love the movie, but sometimes you think, oh, that wasn't what I expected. That wasn't what I wanted to see. I like my picture that I painted better in my mind rather than what they what they put on film. Yeah.
Now, this was a very interesting writing exercise because it's not like a work of fiction that has a plot and a climax. Although it sure does paint a bit of a story. You know, I get at the end too. I think there's all these really, really good people who are gathering, who are attracted towards Bitcoin, people who are good, who are moral, who want an honest, true system. And I think that there are people who've been corrupted, who I referred to in the article as the dark souls, who are liars, right? And who are cheaters, who are trying to get something for nothing. And I do paint this picture. We don't quite get to the climax of the story yet, but I say they're scared, the dark souls, right? Their prisoners are leaving and their judge is marching towards them. And there's nothing they can do about it. And I think that's a beautiful picture of what Bitcoin actually does truthfully represent, the displacement of a lot of the corruption and dishonesty all over the world in various countries that are subject to different types of corruption and various institutions that are subject to various different types of corruption. Bitcoin's incorruptible. I've written about that in a lot of places, and it's growing. And so it's treading unstoppably into the turf of the corrupt. Who can say that's not a good thing other than the corrupt who stand to lose by it?
Yeah. And one thing that you actually say at the end in that Dark Souls section is one step at a time, always forward, every 10 minutes marching. And I think I really like that personally, because one, I'm a big person with quotes and words and phrases. And one saying that I always like, and I always, you know, when I'm talking to friends and in, you know, encouraging them with like the paths that they're on and you know, the work that they're doing in their careers. And I always like to say, like, always forward, never back. And, you know, I think you say
Bitcoin
it right
can't
there.
Go backwards. You cannot remove a block from the blockchain. You can replace it with a higher proof of work, but you can never reduce the number of blocks in the blockchain, which is really this really powerful thing. And, you know, I think powers that be are going to try to attack it in different ways, but they're kind of confounded by this. Like the more attacking energy you throw at it, the bigger you make it. So so the more it displaces you with truth. I did very much want to get the idea of a march in. And again, this was, you have to make trade-offs when you're trying to write a 5-minute article and you're already at 6 minutes. But I do also envision, I don't want to envision it as a tree standing still. I want to envision it and all the Bitcoiners as being on a march. And we're marching in a lot of directions at once, but it's this forward momentum, right? We're headed for you. Your days are numbered, bad guys, right? Like, and we're marching together and the crowd is getting bigger and bigger and we can't be stopped. And that's kind of the exciting thing for me. I think that the day that I wrote that article, I made a couple of tweets. I should have pulled them up, but I think as much as we look at Bitcoin, we see this beautiful, glorious, wonderful thing. It is an absolute horror show to the people who take advantage of us and suck our livelihood away because they've got a good thing going, being parasites on the rest of civilization. And this thing is a cure. And so I don't know if you remember the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. There was a, like in the voice of haunted little children that would go, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you, 3, 4. Did that ring a bell for you at all, Eric? Or that's
I've actually never seen it.
Okay, so there's this horror, this at least trilogy of horror movies where if you went to sleep, Freddy Krueger would come in your dreams and kill you, and if you died in your dreams, you died in real life, and he was this horrific character. But and it had this very famous poem. So I rewrote the poem. I did like 1, 2 Bitcoin's coming for you, 3, 4. Oh, what was my rhyme there? It's a value store. 5, 6, it'll end your tricks. 7, 8, it does not inflate. 9, 10, you'll never rule again. And like that's how I'd like for the for those people to picture Bitcoin, right? They can't go to sleep. It's coming for them, and it's going to end their reign. And good on it, because it's not like in the horror movies where it's a bad guy coming for good kids. In this case, it's good guys coming for the bad guys with a really powerful tool.
Definitely. And one thing that you mentioned right there is like, it's a march, but we're not marching like it's in a line. People are marching in a lot of different directions. Almost an interesting way to like visualize that is, you know, you look at a globe or a sphere or a basketball, whatever it may be, and you start with one, and then you, like you were talking about your exponentials, you know, you add 10. And or it multiplies by 10, and then those 10 start to go outward, but then as they go, they all grab more and more and more until sooner or later they meet on the other side of the globe at one point. And it's not just a straight line surrounding like the equator, it's like filling a bucket. It's going to spread out with water around the whole thing first. And so I think that's an interesting way to think about that, and I think that's a really good visualization that you've put forth here. So I always enjoy your writings. Before we wrap up, do you have anything else you want to add about either of these pieces or anything you want to plug?
I continue to write on Medium. I think all my articles are interesting, or else I wouldn't publish them, of course. so I find them fascinating. I hope the listeners do too. I've kind of made this commitment. I'm getting invited on a number of podcasts that I want to try in each one to do what I've done here with you, which is to read a different article and have a different discussion about that article, so that I'm not doing the podcast circuit and you're hearing the exact same thing over and over and over again. And so I'd say to people, keep an eye out. If there's particular pieces you want me to read, do let me know. And because I know people do enjoy hearing the author read their own writings from time to time. And listen, stack sats, folks, and a hodl, and educate yourself, learn. I would maybe just plug one or two of my other articles here. One is called Bitcoin is a Test. And if you've been in Bitcoin for a little while, I think it's worthwhile to read that one. It's only a 4-minute read. And it talks about how Bitcoin affects you. And another one that's also really short that I think is really a good read, again, especially for people who are starting to spend more time in Bitcoin, is called Rich or Poor, Bitcoiners Have What Money Can't Buy. And it really is just shifting the focus away from how rich you're getting with Bitcoin. It doesn't even talk about it. It talks about the things that money can't buy that you get from the process of becoming a Bitcoiner. And believe it or not, you get these things. So I'm not going to spoil the article. Maybe I'll end up coming on here and reading it sometime. And I'd be very happy to be back, Eric. I really, really enjoy our conversations. And look at how much you've added to my work in both cases, but especially with this portrait. Like, people who read the article are missing out. That's definitely what I'm going to say when I share this podcast, like, because you've added to it. You've added to the picture. I really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your continued support. Definitely means a lot to me, and just all of the value that you've added to my show as well. You know, you've come on twice now, been a great guest both times. And obviously the listeners enjoy it, as we have a pretty high listener rate on the last one. I think it's going to be the same on this one again. I will make sure to have links to both of those that you just mentioned in the show notes. I'll have links to all your pages as well, if you don't mind just reminding the listeners where to find you. Yeah. And I'll have that in there as well.
Sure. Tomer Strohlight, Strohlight, Tomer, I guess. Neither is easy to spell. So Tomer, Strohlight is both my Twitter handle and my Medium. So at Tomer Strohlight or tomerstrohlight.medium.com. And that'll get you my daily thoughts on Twitter. And every time I publish a new article, I share it there too. And obviously I share it on there through Medium for the time being, which seems to be working quite well for me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, Tomer. It's a pleasure as always. I enjoy listening to you speak, reading your pieces and all of the above. I look forward to our future conversations to continue.
Thank you, Eric. Bye-bye.
Take us away, bro.